south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Let's see, where should we start? What should we talk about today? Hey, here's a question for you. You know, I've been doing this show, I think, 11 or 12 years now, consistently. Except for the occasional vacation, I haven't missed too many shows at all. 2 new shows a week. So my question is the show getting dumber, smarter, or staying pretty much the same? Or am I getting dumber or smarter or pretty much staying the same? Because, you know, a lot of my friends and family never listen to my show at all. Because, you know, for some, Facebook and TikTok are a lot more interesting. So I kind of have to depend on you guys out there to give me feedback. Sure, I got a couple of close friends that do that too on occasion. But you never really know if they're giving their opinions just to needle me. The other thing, though, after doing the show for 12 years, I never really know how much I'm repeating myself. Of course, you know, sometimes you have to do that because new listeners are coming on all the time. It's kind of a balancing act. Oh, and speaking of buddies of mine, you know, I've gotten a few emails here and there asking me how Captain Mango got his name. They're wondering how it came about. Did I give it to him? Well, I don't think so, but I was there when it stuck. Happened a long time ago. If memory serves, it turns out, I'd say 8 years ago. A group of us were out at a beach town in Guatemalan boonies. I hope I got this right now. And we either bought or someone gave us a sack full of big mangoes. So nighttime fell and we were on our way back to Guatemala City. We had this big sack of mangoes in the car. Then it started to rain. It wasn't pouring, but it was raining fairly steady. And as we hit the main highway approaching Guatemala City, traffic started building up. It's nighttime now, remember. It's raining. The traffic's getting thicker. And then, of course, this crazy-ass motorcyclist starts weaving in and out of traffic. Either he was drunk or had the requisite amount of brain cells missing. That's right, missing brain cells. That's a requirement to be a motorcyclist here. What his problem was, I couldn't tell you, but that guy came awful close to hitting us a number of times and hitting other people too, weaving in and out. Sometimes he was in front of us, sometimes behind, sometimes right next to us, crossing over 2-3 lanes at a time. The guy had a real death wish. So Captain Mango, or the soon-to-be Captain Mango, rolled down his window, took out a big old mango, and whipped it at the guy. Just about clocked him. The guy didn't seem to notice at all. He just kept on weaving. So Captain Mango whipped another. And another. Can't remember if he hit the guy or not. He may have. But that went on for quite a while. Till the mangoes ran out, or nearly ran out. And I'm telling you, these were huge mangoes. A direct hit could really hurt, cause a lot of damage. So anyway, from that moment on, he was Captain Mango. So for all you inquisitive guys and gals out there who are wondering if he got that name because he eats lots of mangoes, has his fridge stocked with mangoes, surely he must grow mangoes or have a mango plantation. Nope, not true. Then perhaps he has a smooth, unblemished, mango-like complexion. Perhaps he carves little mango trinkets and sells them to tourists, makes mango wine, or maybe looks like a mango. Inquiring minds want to know. Well, the mystery's over. Wonder no longer. It's none of the above. Well, kind of. Now, get this. One listener even wrote in asking if Captain Mango has any t-shirts for sale, any merchandising. You know, keychains, ashtrays, wristwatches. Well, he's got some personalized Captain Mango wardrobe touches, that's for sure. But as far as merchandising and things for sale to the public, not yet. Another thing about Captain Mango, he's a big believer in vitamin T. Tequila. Only the good stuff, though. But one of his main gifts is that he's got a green thumb. So then why isn't he growing mangoes? Well, in lieu of that, he runs a small coffee plantation. The thing is, being way up in the Altiplano at about 5,000 to 6,000 feet above sea level, the coffee grows like gangbusters, but mangoes, they like to be at sea level. That's not to say you can't grow them at 5,000 or 6,000 feet. I've done it. You do see mango trees here and there while walking up and down the streets and out in the wild. But believe me, they prefer to grow at or near sea level. And the Altiplano being a mile high is anything but that. By the way, if you're into growing your own anything, take avocados. They grow extremely well in the Altiplano. And you know as well as I do, avocados are really big up in the States and they're very expensive now. And that's one of the real great secondary effects of living in Latin America. You could plant just about anything in your backyard and it'll grow. You could jam a stick in the ground, come back in 2 or 3 weeks and see green shoots sprouting out of it. In fact, down here in Latin America, there's kind of a natural fence that farmers and indigenous people often put up. You heard that right, a natural, organic, living fence. It's not at all constructed like a regular fence. It's done by jamming a certain kind of stick into the ground. Wherever you might want your fence, you put those sticks in the ground about 6 inches to a foot apart. Now, each stick is about 2 to 3 feet tall. And believe me, these things are just sticks. They've got no leaves or foliage on them. They look dead. Then, in a couple of weeks, they begin to sprout. Of course, you want to start them out in the rainy season. Give them a fighting chance. And within a year's time, you've got a natural, solid fence that you can't even see through. I forgot the name of that plant now. It slipped my mind. But you see them all over the place, especially where there's coffee fields. The point is, if you're living down here in Latin America and you've got any kind of garden or natural space at all, you can grow practically anything. So why not plant a garden and some fruit trees? It's even more important now with all the food shortages and the chain supply interruptions. And with inflation booming and the price of food jumping up by, they're saying, in some places up in the first world, 100% in just 1 year. Man, if you have just a tiny piece of land down here, you'll never have to worry about that. On top of that, if you put your mind to it, you could even make some money if you got a little bit of land. You know, avocados are really big up in the States, and man, are they expensive now. In Spanish, they're called aguacates. Aguacates. Close enough for government work, huh? I like them a lot myself. I eat them practically every day, so let's talk a bit about them. Since when you come on down, you'll probably want to plant a few trees yourself. Now, avocados, as opposed to mangoes, don't like growing at sea level. That's why the big avocado producers are up in higher altitudes. Not that you can't get them to grow, let's say, at your beach house. It's just that they don't thrive as near as well. By the way, as you might expect, at low altitudes in the hot tropical areas, long-haired dogs don't do as well either. But Latinos, even gringos, don't seem to get that. I'll tell you, it's a fact. Long-haired dogs in beach areas. It's a sad thing to see, but the owners just don't seem to get it. They always look kind of mangy, sluggish, and miserable. And the bigger they are, the more miserable they look. Unless, of course, it's a yapping little lap dog that lives in air conditioning all the time. But really, sometimes it's just pathetic. For example, when you're hanging in the lowlands or a beach town and you see a Latino with a German Shepherd or a Siberian Husky. Oh, and I'll tell you, Latinos love those Siberian Huskies. You know why? Because they just love the fact they've got brilliant blue eyes. I'm not kidding you. Imagine that. The blue-eyed thing here in Latin America extends to dogs, too. Matter of fact, I've had that very conversation with Latinos owning those dogs or hoping to own one. In other words, Siberian owner wannabe syndrome. But it's usually just a dream, not a reality. The average Latino family, you know, won't shell out $500 or $1,000 to get one of those. You know, they're kind of expensive, even down here, because they're purebreds. You know, dishing out $500 or $1,000 for the average Latino family is 2 or 3 months' salary. Sort of like the average American spending $5,000 to $10,000 on a dog. And you know, that's just not going to happen. So yes, I've noticed that some of the wealthier Latino families do have Siberian or Alaskan Huskies with the bright blue eyes. Of course, they come with that long hair, too. They can be okay and quite comfortable if they're up in the altiplano, but man, they'll keep out of the sun. However, they're pretty much constantly miserable at low elevations and sea level. Unless, of course, they're in an air-conditioned house all the time. But confinement like that's no good at all for a big dog. And when they're running around outside in the heat and humidity with that long hair, they pick up all sorts of bugs and grunge, and they roll in things too, you know. Especially if another animal's recently been there. Speaking of animals, did you know that Latin Americans have the most pets per capita than any other region in the world? In fact, considering Argentina and Mexico, according to recent stats, 80% of households have at least one pet, generally a dog. Obviously, they're not counting the cucarachas. By the way, pets in Spanish is mascota. Mascota, which comes from the root word mascot. Makes sense, right? So the way it breaks down by statistics, Argentina, Mexico, and Brazil have the highest per capita pet ownership in the world. For example, according to stats, 65% of families in Argentina have a dog. 63% of Mexican families have a dog, and 57% of Brazilian families have a dog. Guess who comes in fourth? The U.S. of A., with slightly less than 50% of families reportedly having a dog. By the way, get this, the American Kennel Club did a survey recently and came up with an average cost of $2,500 per year to take care of a dog in the USA. That's food, grooming, veterinary costs, vacation boarding, etc., etc. That's if you have a dog and you live in an American city. Now, doing the numbers, that means if you have a small dog and you live in the city, they generally live around 13 years, That's $33,000 over the life of that dog. Sounds like a lot, but sure beats having kids. Anyway, according to this chart in the USA, 50% of U.S. households have one kind of pet or other. All right, looking at these charts, guess who owns the most cats per capita by far? Take a guess. Time's up. Russian families. In fact, they own twice as many cats per capita than most any other country. I don't get it. I'm not much of a cat lover myself. Though they're not bad with barbecue sauce. They just don't have a lot of meat on them. By the way, can you guess which three countries have the least amount of cats as pets? You probably guessed. China, South Korea, and Japan. But oddly enough, those same three countries, along with Turkey, have the highest percentage of pet fish per capita. Yeah, pet fish. They're part of the family, all right. How heartwarming. Picture this. Your pet fish trembling and staring anxiously at the front door as you pull up in the driveway after work. Pet fish. I never quite got that concept. Oh, and one last interesting thing on this chart. The country that has by far the most pet birds, you'll never guess. And they've got twice as many birds per capita than the next country competitor. That would be, time's up, and there is some irony to this, Turkey. Not kidding you, it really is Turkey. Though I doubt anyone in Turkey has a Turkey for a pet. By the way, I was in Turkey just a couple of weeks ago, Istanbul. You know, the Turkish lira crashed around 40 to 50% against the dollar this year, so everything was dirt cheap. I went to the big bazaar, it's supposed to be the biggest one in the world. They got 5,000 little tiendas jammed into that place. It's a real experience, but I'll tell you, I'd never want to go back. Once is enough. First off, they certainly don't seem to like gringos all that much there, but they tolerate us because, well, because it's all about commerce and trade and all that. Now, here's an observation. Lots of gringos and expats will tell you when they hit Latin America, land at the airport in whatever big city, once you get outside the airport doors and you're in the area with the taxis and all that, the people, the locals, are bound to come up to you and try to sell you trinkets and stuff. And that's just what you need, right? After you've been fighting it out with TSA and all the other jerks at the airport, after having been jammed into what's essentially a metal tube a couple of miles in the air for 3 or 4 hours, it's its own kind of torture with any number of screaming kids, obese seatmates, and God forbid you gotta make a trip to that bathroom. Meanwhile, back in your seat, whilst trying to pick out the edible parts of that pre-digested airplane food, there's that occasional deadly fart that wafts by. Enough said about that. By the way, in Spanish, a fart is a pedo. P-E-D-O, pedo. And if you're known to be a frequent farter, no, not frequent flyer, frequent farter, you're known as a pedoro, pedoro. Nothing complimentary about that term. Anyway, after those grueling hours in the plane and at the airport, when you walk out, you don't want to get bombarded with people selling you trinkets. But they'll be there, especially if you're landing in a gringo tourist area. And the worst thing for me is if you're in a garden restaurant or even inside a restaurant, and suddenly an old lady or young kid pops up and shoves some trinkets in your face. Sometimes, though it may sound rude, it's best not to make eye contact at all, because if you make too much eye contact or actually let them put a trinket in your hand, you'll draw even more of them to you. You'll have a hard time shaking them off. Thankfully, in Latin America anyway, most restaurant owners won't allow street sellers or street hawkers in the restaurant bothering customers. Though once in a while, one or two will sneak in, but they won't last long. They'll get bounced out. Problem is, if you're like me, you like people watching, so you go to outdoor restaurants where they've got a few chairs and tables under umbrellas out on the sidewalk. Then, for sure, people are going to come by trying to sell you stuff. And believe me, when you're on the gringo tourist trail, that could get out of hand. But if you're off the trail, that rarely happens. Though, even off the trail and way out in the boonies, you get the occasional shoeshine guy, but it's hardly ever a problem. Now, I know it sounds like I'm digressing again, but I'm heading somewhere with this. Bear with me. The point is, if you're not interested, you say no thanks, no gracias, or just no. That's usually enough, but some of them, you need to say it 2 or 3 times. Now, sometimes, if they're very persistent, they'll even make that certain hand-to-mouth motion indicating they're hungry, which may or may not be true, but it does add a little sympathy into the mix. As for me, when they're peddling stuff and I turn them down and they give me that I'm hungry hand motion thing, I size them up to see if they really are on the edge. You can tell by their shoes, their clothes, their eyes, hygiene, you can tell. And if they're really on the edge, I'll buy something from them or give them 50 cents or a buck. But I'll tell you, if they got a decent cell phone, especially one that's better than mine, and I have a pretty crappy one actually. If they have a bunch of jewelry, a nose ring or face piercings, tattoos, ass crack pants, a gold tooth or two, and a real pair of Pumas or Nikes, even if they're scruffy, chances are the I'm hungry thing's a sympathy ploy. The thing is, though, when you tell them no or you shoo them away, that's enough. They're usually on their way. And later on, when you're walking around town, even in a gringo tourist area, and you see the same guy or gal, they'll give you a look from across the street, maybe hold up the jewelry or whatever they're selling, but they won't run over and pounce on you. Again, I'm saying this is the kind of stuff that happens on the gringo tourist trail. When you're not on the trail and you're with the real people or out in the boonies, that almost never happens. The point is, you say no one or two or maybe three times and they're gone. Though it is still kind of aggravating. And you hear gringos, expats, and tourists complaining about it all the time. As for me, especially when I'm eating, I don't want people coming up to me trying to sell me stuff. It's happened to me 1,000 times, especially on the tourist trail. You'll be sitting alone at a garden restaurant or even with a couple of people, and suddenly you'll spot a person or two or three coming at you from across the street, and you're thinking, oh no, here they come. How do you handle it? Are you nice about it? Are you civil? Well, that's cool. You should be. What about when they persist? Do you tell them to F off? Well, that's not a good idea either. But what are you going to do? So then what's the best move? I repeat, you ignore them or just give them a couple of firm no's and they're gone. Now, to some newbie expats and gringos and tourists, the first couple of times it happens, it can be a lot of fun. Though, the longer you're down here, it does wear on you. Really, when you think about it and look at the bigger picture, it's not so bad at all. The reality is, what you see in that regard in Latin America is nothing compared to what it's like in certain other parts of the world where the vendors are on you like stink on poop. In some places, they get their hooks into you and just won't let go. Case in point. As mentioned a couple weeks ago, I was in the biggest bazaar in the world, Istanbul, Turkey. I sat down in an outdoor cafe to have a cup of coffee. I ordered my coffee, the waiter left, the Turkish guy walked up to me with a knapsack, put it on my table, pulled out about 10 different types of counterfeit perfumes and colognes. Then he pulled out a little velvet pad from under his coat where he had a bunch of fake Rolexes. I made the mistake of momentarily picking up one of those perfume boxes just to look at the packaging and the fine print to see how good a fake it was. And he immediately said, 70 euros. I said, 70 euros? Hell, you could buy the real thing for 80 or 90. By the way, a euro these days is worth about $1.10. Then he said, yes, you're right. The real thing's around 100 euros. But there are some really good fakes. Not all fakes are created equal. Take this Rolex, and he handed it to me. 300 euros, he said. And a real one? 4,000. He said, indistinguishable to all but the collector. I said, I'd never pay 300 euros for a fake anything. He said, how much would you pay? I said, if you've noticed, I don't wear any jewelry, watches, or any bling at all, which means I wouldn't even pay 100 euro for a really great fake. He said, I have a Rolex for 100 euros, but it's not a really good fake. They're really good ones like this, the one he handed me, 300 euros. For you, 250. Then he said, but I have a mediocre fake for around 200 euros and a really fake fake for around 100 euros. You don't want that one. If you look close, you could tell it's a fake. And I said, oh, really? You mean there's three kinds of fake Rolexes? I said, well, guess what, bud? A fake is a fake is a fake. I don't care if there's a good, better, or best fake. But I did learn something today about fakes. I said, one last time, look at my wrist. I don't even wear a watch, so you're wasting your time. Then he walked over to another table. I got my coffee, drank it, and was out of there in about 20 minutes. After about a half hour, I'm walking deep into the bazaar, and suddenly the guy's in front of me. He shoves the perfume in my face and says, 50 euros. I said, look, I'm not interested. He said, how much would you pay? I said, not interested. He said, come on, everyone has a price they'd pay. What would you pay? I shook my head. Then I started walking, and he's right next to me, still haggling. I just couldn't get rid of this guy, so I ducked into a leather clothing store. And he did not follow me in, because it seems that the guys that are walking around trying to sell you stuff are not allowed inside official licensed stores. So I was in that leather store 10 or 15 minutes, and I walked out, and guess who's standing right there? Starts following me again. Again with the, how much would you pay line. I just could not get rid of this guy and ducked into another store, an electronics store. And since in a past life I was an engineer, stores like that and hardware stores can keep me busy for a long, long time. I must have been in that place for a half an hour. I forgot all about that guy till I walked out. He was standing there again. I just could not ditch him. Now, remember, there are thousands of people walking around in this bazaar, but I still couldn't lose this guy. That guy was on my tail for at least 2.5 hours. I ran into him everywhere in that bazaar. Remember, like I said, there's 5,000 different tiendas there. You could get yourself completely lost and never find your way out of there. And of course, practically every 10 steps, there was a guy just like him trying to hawk his stuff or get you into his store. And in the end, later in the day, when I was heading out the bazaar, I ran into him again. Remember I said his initial offer for that box of perfume in the restaurant was 70 euro. Well, by the time I was walking out, 2.5 hours later, he was down to 3 boxes of perfume for 10 euros. And I still didn't bite, but I learned a big lesson. No matter how much gringos, expats, and tourists complain about getting pestered over and over by little hawkers on the street selling trinkets in Latin America, I have to say, until you've been to other places in the world like Asia or the Middle East, those complaints you have about street vendors in Latin America, well, you ain't seen nothing yet. So count your blessings. Hey, speaking of controversy, how about this email? It comes from Mr. Neetson O. He says, Johnny, you have a very interesting show. Here's a question for you. Do you know what country has an average IQ of 47.72? Why, it's Guatemala. Johnny, what's it like to live around this sort of population? Are you able to tell the difference? Also, why do you live there given the immense poverty and it's scoring among the most violent countries in the world in terms of violent crime and theft by nearly all metrics? It also seems that most of the countries that surround Guatemala also have a history of blatant corruption and violent crime. What makes Guatemala a better place to live than any other countries that surround it? Sincerely, Neetson O. Well, Mr. N.O., I can call you No, right? How about Dr. No? I like that better. You sound exactly like a person who's never, ever visited the place, and all you get is your data from U.S. government and lamestream media sources. In fact, Doc, ever since I started this show, something like 12 years ago now, I've always made it a point when the subject of crime and violence comes up to tell people that I rather like the fact that the U.S. has Guatemala and the rest of the Central American countries on its blacklist or shit list. Because, you see, as soon as the U.S. State Department gives a country its seal of approval, like it did with Costa Rica some 20 or so years ago, the gringos begin to pile in and totally ruin the place. And now, though Costa Rica is very beautiful, cost of living has skyrocketed, rents are like New York, not to mention every single gringo and expat I know who's lived there for more than a couple of months has been ripped off and gouged in no small way either. It seems everyone there has become a slave to materialism and the gringo dollar. Now, Dr. No, when you mention the poverty and the high scores and violence regarding Guatemala, I'd like to invite you to visit any big city in the United States. Just get into a taxi and ask him to map out all the places in the city a newbie tourist or visitor should never visit on foot or even in a car, day or night. He'll give you an earful because there's places taxis won't even go. Oh, and you talk about corruption. You know, there's full agreement amongst every single gringo and expat who I've ever gotten into this conversation with. We all agree on one thing. There's plenty of corruption in Latin America, but it's on a tiny scale compared to the usual and customary levels of corruption in the first world. Look, when in the U.S. you get elected to the Senate, House of Representatives, Vice President, or President, you have to report your earnings and tax returns before you enter office. Isn't it funny that guys like Obama, who was a state senator from Illinois, made around 80 grand a year? It's just amazing, or maybe it isn't, that now, look it up, in 2022, his net worth is $70 million. In fact, almost every congressman that walks into office making an upper middle class salary as a lawyer or whatever, a couple $100,000 a year maybe. Isn't it funny? They're all worth mega millions by the time they serve out their terms. And most of them, like Bernie Sanders, are career politicians who never worked a job for a company that actually made a product. They're nothing but sociopathic parasites. Now, Dr. No, as far as that 49 average IQ thing, it's a good thing to remember, even in the first world, every other person you meet on the street is below average. Anyway, Dr. No, if you're in a country that has a low average IQ, and you yourself are of a higher IQ, even though you can relate with practically everyone on the street, in regards to day-to-day living, you got to wonder, how are you going to find anyone to have high-level conversations with? After all, if you ask a guy with an IQ of 140 what's a black hole, you'll get a completely different answer from the guy with an IQ of 49. The thing is, if you know anything about basic statistics, there's the bell curve. If you spread it over an IQ chart, to the right of center on that curve, even with a 49 average IQ, you'll see after a couple of standard deviations, that country will still have a percentage of very bright people. Some rather brilliant ones, too. That's how statistical probabilities pan out. So it's not like just because the average IQ is 49, everyone you meet's going to be a shit for brains Biden or Bush Jr. Fact is, I know quite a few very bright Latinos myself. Some with advanced degrees. I've met guys and gals a lot smarter than I am. Though they all, the smart ones and the idiots, have that one glaring Latin defect that doesn't depend at all on IQ. It's that ubiquitous mañana time thing. There's nothing we can do about that. Fact is, after a while, it starts rubbing off on us gringos and expats, too. Not because it's contagious, but because we've all been stood up or have been standing around holding the bag like idiots for so long. After a while, and for some of us, it could take years. Eventually, we get it. We just know better than to show up on time or expect them to. I mean, really, how many times does it take to learn your lesson, waiting on the plumber or the air conditioning guy for 2, 3, even 6 hours before he shows up? In fact, for some Latinos, 2, 3, even 6 hours late would be a blessing, a gift. Look, think of the phrase mañana time. It's a thoroughly well-known and understood part of life in all 20 Latin American countries. It has to do with tomorrow, not 2, 3, or 6 hours from now. But where were we? Oh yeah, Dr. Knows email. Just a couple more comments. Number one, if you're living in a Latin American country, you'll always be able to find intelligent people to hang out with and talk to, no matter what the average IQ of the country. Number two, every single Latin American city and town has many sections, neighborhoods, and districts that are absolutely modern and first world in every way. That's where the upper middle classes, the wealthy, and the business owners live and work. And because every single well-known first-world franchise has landed good and bad, even the ones you hate, that means if you're living or working down here yourself, you can get practically anything. Oh, and just know in those nice upscale areas I'm talking about, and they're everywhere, the crime statistics are very low. In fact, in many cases, much lower than what you'd consider low-crime areas in the U.S. But you'd never know that from the blogs and the media crap, which is completely okay by me. I mean, look, if you're living down here, especially off the gringo tourist trail, the last thing you want is hordes of gringos coming down, jacking up the cost of living, changing things dramatically, the way they want it, and throwing a monkey wrench, make that a hand grenade or even a cruise missile, into what once was a nice, calm, friendly, laid-back culture. All right, just to finish off here, I came across a very interesting article. A survey of 1,700 world travelers. These are seasoned adult travelers who have been to at least 25 different countries. They asked this question to a mix of international travelers at airports, and not just citizens from the U.S. or Europe. They were asked, what country would you never want to visit again? Number one, Egypt. Number two, China. Tied for third place, India and Russia. Number four, the USA. Tied at number five, France and Mexico. Number six, Turkey. Number seven, Brazil. Number eight, Australia. Notice that the only two Latin American countries that showed up on that top 10 no-go list were Brazil and Mexico.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.